Asha, welcome to Curio City. I'm so excited to chat with you today. I love your work. And yeah, so we're going to just jump right into it. Hey, curious cuties. Welcome to Curio City. In today's episode, we dive deep into the realm of Indigenous healing with the incredible Asha Frost, an Ojibwe medicine woman, best-selling author, and guide. You'll discover the power of ancestral wisdom as Asha shares her profound insights and experiences, bridging the gap between traditional Indigenous teachings and the modern world. You'll explore the pages of her best-selling book, You Are the Medicine, and unlock the potential within yourself. You'll learn about the significance of ceremonies, the creation of the sacred medicine oracle, and witness the magic as Asha guides us through the journey of personal empowerment. Keep listening for an enlightening conversation that promises to reconnect you with the medicine within and inspire you to rise into your own power. Settle in and get ready to embark on a journey of healing, wisdom, and self-discovery with Asha Frost. Can you share a defining moment from your journey that led you to embrace your role as an Indigenous healer and guide?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think that it was a constant evolution from when I first started, when I was diagnosed with lupus when I was 17. Mm. That was the start, the initiation of my healing path, and even the initiation of myself as a healer. I didn't know that at the time, but that sent me on this journey of reclaiming my roots and finding my own medicine. Yes. And then I became a homeopath. So I became a homeopath and started seeing people. And as I started seeing people and actually working with people, spirit became really loud. So I would see visions around them. I would hear spirits talking to them. I would see their animal spirits. I would see their ancestors. And that was this awakening to, oh, my work is beyond this homeopathic capacity. I feel a lot of spirit calling me, and I think that I want to go into more deeper medicine work. So that really was, I think, the awakening of that pathway. But the beautiful thing was it just kept unfolding as I stepped forward. So I would step forward, I would hear a call, and I'd listen and take that step and then take that action. And then something else would unfold for me. So I think the claiming happened as I walked forward.
I love that. That's so beautiful. You realized that your calling was beyond just the physical, like it was becoming a lot more tangibly spiritual and energetic. Mm-hmm. And in your book, You Are the Medicine, it beautifully captures Indigenous wisdom. Mm-hmm. How do you see this wisdom contributing to personal empowerment in the modern world?
I think there's so much application for Indigenous wisdom in the modern world. I think if anything, we are craving that, or we're missing that, or we're looking for that and searching for that. For me, it's about connection. Yeah. And I think that we think outside of ourselves all the time. The answers are outside of ourselves. And I really think that connection is the medicine that we need. Mm-hmm. I remember my publisher and other people asking from the marketing perspective, how are you going to market this? Like, what's the terminology? Mm-hmm. What's the sexy kind of hook, right? And right. I thought, I don't really have one. Really, it's connection, because over my 20 years of practice with thousands of people, that is where the biggest transformation has happened, through their internal connection, through they're remembering who they are. So I think that remembering who you are through the lens of all of creation, the land, all of our kin on the earth, I think that's so powerful. And it's something that everybody has access to. And I think that that is the call right now.
That's beautiful. And people who are Indigenous and non-Indigenous alike, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, my teachings are for everybody. That book went out there for everyone, because I think we all we're craving, we're hungry for, we're thirsty for connection. And I think that's the most beautiful thing, is You Are the Medicine means you have access to this. You have the ability to do this. And I know, of course, we need guides and mentors and coaches and all those things. But ultimately, that medicine is so powerful within you. And I learned that when folks would lie on my healing table and we'd initiate a healing session, the most powerful thing was when they saw something from spirit. They felt a message. Mm. They heard guidance. I could tell them what I saw, felt, heard. And that was powerful. But it wasn't until they really aligned with their own wisdom and can connect that it really rooted down. So that's how I learned that the medicine is within you. And when you initiate and activate it, that's when the change happens.
Yeah, I was going through one of the seasons of my life when I was really being transformed by the concept, the truth that everybody has ancestors, right? Mm-hmm. So it's beyond just, you know, being Indigenous. Of course, being Indigenous, there's a lot of things that come a lot more naturally to me, just either by teaching that I've learned or like by family or just intuitively, naturally. But everyone has ancestors. And to me, my spirituality and a lot of the, like the knowledge, the downloads I get, I believe are coming from my ancestors. And people would ask me like, you know, well, what does that happen for me? Do I have the ability to connect with my ancestors? And I'm like, yeah, everybody has them. And I believe that, like, even kind of like what you're mentioning, the medicine is in you. I think that our ancestors are also within us, like available to us to teach us and to guide us whenever we're ready to listen.
Mm-hmm. Always. I think that that's the most beautiful thing. And we've been so detached, or I think fractured, from those teachings. People yeah. always ask me, but how do I connect to my ancestors? And what if I didn't like my ancestors? Or what if I've been broken apart from that lineage and I don't even know my history? I think that they still live in your blood, your bones, yeah. your sacred water. So there's ways to connect that aren't the ways that maybe you've been taught.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you also have your Sacred Medicine Oracle deck, which I've gotten and I've used, and it's a powerful tool that you've created. How do you hope, and I mean, I know so many people have gotten the Oracle deck, but how do you hope individuals will use it to connect with, you know, that inner healing potential?
When I wrote the guidebook, when I wrote the message for each card, it was still in that same vision of how can you remember your own medicine? How can these words activate your remembering? So yeah. it was like a transmission, or it was like a vibration that I hoped that when people read it, it would initiate some kind of remembering within them. Of course, the picture and the artwork did that too. Mm-hmm. But it was really with that intention that you would remember, you maybe would hear your ancestors in your dreams at night, or maybe you would hear something, it would be a synchronicity, and you'd remember the card you chose that morning. So it was almost like opening a portal to that spirit world. And I'm seeing people use it that way. So it's a delight to see that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It is. It's just another tool to like connect you to spirit, or to your ancestors, or to the guy, or like your guides, and makes you just more aware of the signs that you're getting. It's like, I don't know, the more you reflect on something, or the more that you focus on something, the more it kind of shows up. And mm-hmm. I think that's a way that I've used it as well. Mm-hmm. So in bridging the gap, between traditional and, you know, traditional Indigenous wisdom and the modern world, what challenges have you faced and how do you navigate them?
I wasn't raised particularly traditionally. Like, my family, my lineage was fairly colonized by mm-hmm. the church. So I'd say it was a harder part to actually reclaim and unwind from those teachings. And in this current climate, to unwind from the colonial harm and the energy and white supremacy that has marinated in all of us, right? That's probably the more challenging thing. I think the hard part was trying to find a clear route back to the traditional ways of knowing and being, because there's been so much trauma and harm and disconnection and fracturing in my lineage with residential mm-hmm. schools and racism, that it was a challenge to find that traditional knowledge in a way that perhaps I thought I had to. Yeah. So I had to learn how to do it in those ways that I think we used to actually do, which is sit with the land, sit with dreaming, mm-hmm. sit with journeying, sit with plants, like do these decolonized ways of remembering and learning and listening to those ancestors' voices in our blood and bones. So that wasn't as much challenging as me questioning that, or me thinking, oh, my path has to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And also blaming myself, when really it's not anybody's fault that we've been disconnected from our lineage and our teachings. It is really the fault of the colonizer and the country that did that to us. So healing through those things, I think.
When I was first kind of reconnecting a few years ago, I came across like the verbiage, like indigenize. So like mm-hmm. but along with decolonization, mm-hmm. it's like, how can I indigenize my life? How can mm-hmm. I indigenize my, like just my way of being? Mm-hmm. A lot of that is is quite simple, and being yes with the land. It's something I very much resonate with. And I'm right there with you. I rewrote the story of Pocahontas, and it was a whole journey for me. Like, today we're modern indigenous people, like we're today's people, we're alive today. Mm-hmm. And it's such an interesting dichotomy to be, I guess, relearning what it means to be indigenous and how to be proud of that and be reclaiming what's ours, and not blaming our ancestors for having to assimilate the way they have. You know, my grandfather was in boarding school, and he was in residential school, and my grandmother, or my great grandmother as well. And, you know, these stories are passed down to us, and they are part of our story and who we are, and acknowledging what they've been through and holding, you know, space for the pain, but then also reclaiming the joy. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole process within rewriting Pocahontas, because, you know, when you're writing, you know, I was 10 years old, and, you know, cause it was kind of that perspective. I was 10 years old and I was kidnapped and blah, blah, blah. It's like, there was a lot, I had to kind of throw myself into, and then also realize like, that's not happening to me right mm-hmm. in this moment. And had to, there's a lot of ceremonies I had to partake in order to mm-hmm. release Matoaka Pocahontas from like my personal story.
I think that's a really potent point, because we tell these stories, and as storytellers, sometimes it feels like it's happening to us, right? Mm-hmm. We tell these stories, they live in our bones. We mm-hmm. do the work to unwind them so we don't pass that on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. And we still hold them because these stories need to be told. So how do we dance between being the story, telling the story, holding it in our bodies, and then doing the healing work to try to unwind that? It's a huge process. And I think that it's a huge journey too in our lives to be able to do that, especially as we move forward and have a vision for a way forward.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you are a, you know, a ceremonial guide. Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that you can resonate with as well. And I'm kind of curious, like, what significance that the ceremonies that you participate in, what significance do they hold in your practice? And how do they contribute to the transformative experiences that you create?
I've had to come to a place where I see many things as ceremony. There's so much beauty in our everyday experiences, and it doesn't have to be this, like, this is the ritual we're setting up with all of these things and this protocol. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a ceremony. I wrote about this in my book. Because I go through flares with my lupus, it's a ceremony to take rest if I'm in a flare. It's a ceremony mm-hmm. to tend to my children before they go to sleep. It's a ceremony to walk out and put tobacco down every morning. So I think if we viewed all of those really sacred moments as ceremony, then it just collects and it gathers into this beautiful way of walking a good way in the world. So that's how I view ceremony and see it and practice it. Of course, I lead a lot of moon ceremonies, and I do that in community. And those things are so beautiful too. But for my personal practice, that's really important.
Yeah. Whenever I hear you speaking, it makes me just think of the word, like, intention. Mm-hmm. It's like stepping into something and doing something with intention. It, a lot of times, like, that is ceremony. Whenever you're present and you're grounded and you're aware of your intentions in that moment, I do see that as ceremony as well. Mm-hmm. So, and you said you do or you do not live on your ancestral territories?
I don't.
You don't.
Okay, no, my mother's family's from Chippewas of Nawash, which is Cape Croker, which is by the Georgian Bay. And then my father's family is from Serpent River, which is north of Sudbury. So it's far away from where I am. I'm north of Toronto.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't grow up on like my ancestral territories. I mean, my dad was, like, he was raised by his grandparents, like, during the summers. He lived on the res, like, the whole time. But he grew up in inner city Detroit, actually. And so he would go over into Canada just for the summers. But like I mentioned, a lot of my family lives there. But you're around, at least where you are, you're at least around a lot more indigenous people. Where I live right now and where I've grown up, I'm like one of the, there's not many of us around here. And so I step into Canada, Canadians are like, what are you even talking about? It's like, we have so much work to do. And I was like, compared to where I live, like, at least people around here know that Indigenous people, like, exist and, like, are real.
Yeah, I think it's very, even when I travel to the States, I notice how important land acknowledgements are. Like, I know people have so much critique of them, but it was in a space for my publisher and they didn't do a land acknowledgement. I was the only Indigenous person in that space. And I realized how important that was for me to feel held by the land and seen. And the fact that that wasn't done felt so traumatizing to me. So I realized even in Canada, we have that safe kind of sacred space for Indigenous folks because you're acknowledged when the land's acknowledged because we are land, right? So I think that that is so, that's something I really noticed between the two countries.
Yeah, it's a big difference. Yeah. Okay, can you share a memorable experience where you witnessed someone reclaiming their roots and finding their healing wisdom through your teachings?
Oh, goodness. I would say every time somebody cries. Mm-hmm. And people really seem to cry in my presence. So it seems to happen a lot. But that's when I know. When somebody says, I don't know why I'm crying. Or, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed I'm crying. Yeah. I feel like tears are remembering. It's your sacred water that's flowing out that says, I remember. I relate to this. This is something that's really important to my spirit. Yeah. So that's happened over and over again, especially when I used to be in private practice and people sit with people. We just go through so much Kleenex and they would be like, I don't know. I've never cried with anybody before. Think that it was something about those tears that really helped me to see that they were remembering a really important part of themselves.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, that's so vulnerable to be able to like share in that moment with somebody. And you're also a mother, right? Yeah. You have two kids?
Okay. I do, yeah.
So I'm kind of curious. I don't have kids. I'm curious how you balance being a mother with your role as an Indigenous medicine woman and like what lessons maybe your children have taught you along your journey.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Oh, they've taught me so much. I call them my little elders. They're so wise. They're so pure. They're so connected to their creation story and their light. They are my teachers in all ways. And balance. I haven't found balance. I think that's such a, I don't know. It's something I think about a lot because I think that I compare myself sometimes to these mothers on Instagram that have these huge businesses that seem to do it all. And I haven't found that in my in my own way. I think tending to my children and tending to them in a good way and making sure that that next seven generations are nurtured, but also nurturing my path because my spark of my purpose here is so bright and so strong.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think, how do I split myself in two? Because I want to do well in both areas. Yeah. And I think that it's really hard. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to do that both in a good way. And sometimes I don't feel like I measure up to that.
I feel like most moms can say like, there's just that constant battle of being like, well, what is balance? Like no one ever feels like they're fully balanced. So I don't think you're alone there. I mean, like I said, I'm not a mother, but from what I've heard, that seems to be a common experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So what advice would you give to individuals seeking to embrace their own ancestral wisdom and rise into their power?
I think the first thing is to acknowledge any grief that you might have for the disconnection. Because I think sometimes we try to leap into the reconnection and we don't acknowledge or give space to the fact of, oh my goodness, these were the stories of why I'm disconnected from my ancestors, or this is the reason why I don't know any of my family. Like really spending some time there in that void part where it's like, there's a reason why I'm in the position that I'm in. That needs to be cleaned up, I think, before we do the reconnection, because then your reconnection can be a little bit more healed. Like you can go in and you've like processed and transmuted some of that grief. And then you can go in and have a spirit to spirit, heart to heart connection with reclaiming those roots. You don't have to do it that way, but that's one thing I think that we don't give enough space in our society or culturally for the grief, for the acknowledgement, mm-hmm. for the validation that, well, there's a reason why. And we often shame ourselves, or we think we're not enough, or we make ourselves like small, like I'm not worthy of claiming, or I'm not worthy of remembering, when in reality, it's all that grief that's just keeping you from that. So that's the first step, is acknowledging the why and the grief and the pain of maybe why that disconnect is there. And then I love like, I love recalling in like the dream time. So resting and journeying and breathing and dancing and singing, like all of those things where our ancestors are living through us. I think that's how they breathe and express themselves through us, through movement, through dance, through singing, through like all of that beauty, right? So it's like, how can you live more joyfully? Because that's the way our ancestors wanted us to live. I think so, at least I believe that.
I completely agree. I'm like nodding like ferociously because I'm just like, yeah, it's like so what I tell people too. The best thing we could do for our ancestors is like they are without like bodies and we are in bodies. And the thing that we can do to honor them best is to be embodied because they live within us. And when we are most embodied, they are most alive. Yeah. I'm right there with you, like being in joy and like, I always say my ancestors, like within, I know, like they're very cheeky. They're very like, sometimes like to just, I don't know, like play around. I feel they have a spirit about them that's kind of just like jokestery and wants to just play, like they want to play. So it's part of them. I think that was stripped from them was like childhood and play. And so it's something that I'm constantly trying to implement into my life. So I love that answer. Okay, so looking ahead, how do you envision the future of Indigenous healing practices in a world that is increasingly recognizing their value?
I think there's like a conversation to be had around how we do this in a really respectful way and how we honor Indigenous people, the Indigenous people that are sharing this. Because I think for so long in my lifetime, you know, the people who have been uplifted have been the ones that have co-opted or extracted our practices and taken them and maybe made them their own or shifted them up. So I think the number one thing is, who are you learning from? Who are you listening to? Where do these practices come from? How can we find Indigenous voices who want to share these things? And then as Indigenous people, how can we support those voices as well? Because there's so much trauma around our teachings being taken and stolen and stripped away, that it's a struggle, right? To share and also to protect and conserve. So I think that I see them being shared more readily. And I do think that they're applicable to all people. That's only my one Indigenous voice and my one Indigenous viewpoint. And I think that honoring the source and seeing, just looking around and seeing, oh, who am I paying attention to? Who am I following? Who am I uplifting? Who am I buying from? Those things are going to start the movement and the shift. But we have to start, I think we have to start there to shift things up a little bit for how they've been.
Yeah, that's such an easy step too. You know, people try to make it so complicated. I'm just like, who are you listening to? Who are you learning from? Who are you following? Who are you buying from? Who are you supporting? Yeah. I love that. Such a good answer. I mean, everything that you've said, I resonate with so deeply. We call the listeners of this podcast Curious Cuties. And I know they'll be so happy to hear this and hear your story, a little bit of your story. And I'll make sure to link your book and the Oracle deck in the podcast description. And I just wanted to thank you again for wanting to be on the podcast, to be on Curio City and spending this time with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lauren. And thank you, Curious. What is it? Curious Cuties?
Curious Cuties.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you, Curious Cuties, for listening. And it's been such a blessing. Thanks, Lauren.
Amazing. Thank you.